Today is December 8th, 1999, Wednesday, in the Absolute Monastery. And our topic, Before Time Was. Once upon a time, before time was, there was a little person who was walking along enjoying life, just finding great peace and happiness wherever he went. And he looked at the trees and he found them sparkling with wonderful green leaves. He found the bark to be very attractive and shiny and white and red and brown from all the various trees he looked at. And he looked around everywhere and he saw that everything that was there was good and beautiful and fun to watch. And everywhere he went, he found peace and happiness. Everything that he did, he found a great deal of joy. And then one day, he met another person. And he says, "Oh my goodness, I thought I was the only person on earth. Everywhere I looked, I saw everything beautiful and good and wonderful. And now you come along. Who are you? Where did you come from? I thought I was the only one here." And his friend answered, "Why, I thought I was the only one here. I've been wandering around for all my life, just enjoying my world and calling everything good and beautiful, and it was good and beautiful." She pointed out to her friend that everything that she saw was wonderful. And so the two of them decided, "Well, let's walk together and let's look at this wonderful world together." And together they went into the lake and swam, and they laid in the sun, and they played, and they ran among the trees. And then one day, the little boy said, "Hey, look what I found." And out came a bunny rabbit. And he says, "Hey, you, what are you? You're different than us." And because they were pure innocents, they could talk to the bunny rabbit, and the rabbit could talk back to them in the same language that they talked to the rabbit with. And the bunny rabbit said, "Why, where did you come from? I thought I was the only one on the face of the earth. I didn't know that there were other living things anywhere around. Just the trees and the plants, the sun and the sky and the water." And so then the bunny rabbit joined them, because each thought of the other as equal, because they could speak together, they could talk and communicate and ideas, and they just had a great old time. And pretty soon, they ran across a snake that was crawling along. And they said, "Look at that stick that walks, you know, that's moving along the ground. Isn't that interesting?" And the stick says, "What? Who's talking to me?" And they said, "Oh, are you alive?" "Yes, of course I'm alive." "Well, why are you lying on the ground? Why don't you stand up and walk like we do?" "Because this is the way I'm designed. And I thought I was the only living creature on the face of the earth. And I thought, surely, if there were ever another living creature, he would be crawling on the ground just like I am." And they looked at him and they said, "Well, he can talk and communicate ideas. You must be exactly the same as we are, just built a little different." And they walked along, and they saw many other creatures. And they saw some other boys and girls. And they saw some men and women. And they saw all these things. And all of these things they saw, and they called good. And very good. They lived in perfect harmony with everyone because they thought of everyone as equal to themselves. doing their own thing, crawling or hopping or walking, and each one was of equal import. And because each one was equally of importance, they did not judge them. And because they listened with the innocence of their heart, they could communicate on the same level of understanding, with the same background of thought, because they were universal mind. And they thought like this for a long time. And then one of the people came along and he says, "Can anyone tell me why the trees are here?" And everyone says, "Because to enjoy them." "No, no. The trees are here so that we can climb up in them and look out over the land and see further." "Oh, is that right? The trees are here only as a tool for us to look around and see things." So, at that moment, the tree became a servant to everyone. The tree became lesser than the others because the other used the tree as a place of looking around and seeing the countryside. And little by little, they began to judge each other. "Because you crawl on the ground, you're not as good as us who stand up tall. And because you hop around, you're not as good as us who stand up tall and walk. You may think like we do, you may talk like we do," but the thing is, they began to judge. Now remember, every one of them was a peer, an equal. Every one of them could do exactly what the other could do, except they expressed themselves in a little different way. Not that the way they expressed themselves was better or worse, it was just another way of expressing. Because you can be sure, to the snake, people walking and hopping and doing other things and expressing themselves in motion in that way was certainly not as beautiful as a snake slithering along through the grass and slithering around, climbing trees and coiling itself around and just having a great old time being a snake. He surely must have thought he was far superior to anyone else, because he could do things that no one else could do. Because when the people, the boys and the girls, tried to slither along the ground by lying down and crawling like a snake, they were not very successful at it. They scraped themselves and hurt themselves. And because they had no clothing on, when they would slide over a rock or a sharp stone, it would scratch them. And so they decided that surely their way was superior to the snakes. And because hopping made them run out of breath, they decided that hopping was only to do for fun and not the best way to walk. And little by little, the boy and girl decided that they were superior to everything else, because they began to judge the others as to what value they were. While in truth, all is of equal value. All is of equal importance. All is of equal reality and divinity. Because all work from the mind. All think, all act upon their thoughts, and all are responsible to them. What is the first thing to go when we start to judge? We lose our innocence. Because when we are innocent, we do not judge. We do not even think to know to judge. Because we think of all things, when we're innocent, we think of all things as being equal. It doesn't matter that we have something and someone else wants it and they come and borrow it. It doesn't matter. We say, "Take it." It doesn't matter that when someone comes and says that they're hungry, that we give them some of our food or all of it, because we are food. We are allness. But the big problem comes along when we lose our innocence, when we let our innocence go, and when we let our innocence go, you know what happens to us? Then we begin to make comparisons of who we are with others and with ourselves, with other boys and girls. And when we judge ourselves with other boys and girls, then we begin to say, even among ourselves, boys are better than girls, or girls are better than boys. What a silly thing to do. And then we say, older boys know more than younger boys, and older girls are more talented than younger girls. And is that true? Not necessarily. Not necessarily at all. What is true is the moment we lose our innocence, the moment we lose our genuine feeling of oneness with all, then we begin to put people in a different perspective, which perspective is not beneficial to us at all. It absolutely destroys us. Now, all of us have roles that we play in life. And we play these roles because we think these roles are important to us. And they are important to us at that moment. But the role of being innocent is so important to us, so vitally important to us, that if we do not play it sincerely, we will lose our perspective. And losing our perspective, we lose everything. Little children, when their mother or father has to leave for a period of time, the first thing a little child says to his parent, mother or father who is standing there, "Why did mommy go away? What did I do wrong?" Or they say, "Why doesn't daddy live at our house anymore? What did I do wrong?" Immediately they think it's something that they did wrong. And in their childish innocence, they believe that they could do something wrong that would cause their parent not to be with them. And they feel terribly bad inside of themselves, and some unwise parents say, "Well, you were a bad boy and you caused him or her to leave. You were a bad girl and you caused your mommy not to want to be in our house, or your daddy not to want to be here." And you see, an unwise parent that does that is planting a seed of destruction in that child that is so powerful, it'll absolutely eat up that child's entire life, no matter what they do. So, the wise parent would say, "Now, sweetheart, nothing you could do would ever make daddy want to leave home, or mommy want to leave home. Nothing you could ever do would make that happen." "Well, why did he go?" "He went because he is on a different adventure right now. Well, I want him back. I want mommy back." "All right, sweetheart, here's what we do. We live as though your mother or your father are here right now. We live just as though they did not leave. We live in such purity and such wholeness that they are with us every moment of the day. And as they are with us every moment of the day, we have them here, whether we have them here in person or not. We have them here as a reality in our life. We are living as though mommy is with us all the time. We are living as though she is just away visiting grandma right now, or just off doing something that's important to her, but she'll soon return. If we live that she will soon return, then she will soon return. But if we live that he has gone away and doesn't like us anymore, if we live as though we have done something bad that has caused him to leave the house, to leave our world, then we might just as well live in the idea that we did something wrong to cause him to go away. Do you follow that? Now, it has nothing to do with reality. It has nothing to do with reality. How many parents die? A mother dies, and the child comes up to the father and says, "Why did mommy leave us? Didn't she love us anymore? Didn't she want to stay in our house anymore? Didn't mommy want to be here anymore?" And the father, who is in anguish, might answer improperly, but the father generally would say, "Mommy loves us very much, and she's in heaven now, and she has left us because she was sick and she had to go away." Or the same for daddy. Then that opens up the doorway for having a new mommy or a new daddy come into the scene. But if the child feels that they have done something terrible that has caused this death in their family, that caused one of the parents to leave, they are destroyed for life. They might live with a very outward picture of not being destroyed, but they're destroyed for life. And how often does the boss on the job say to you, "You're doing a wonderful job"? Not very often. The boss is paying you money to have you do your job right, and he doesn't say, "You're doing a good job," or she doesn't come up to you and say, "That's a wonderful job you're doing there." They may say that occasionally, but that's not the norm for them to say that. What they do is say, "Hey, I'm paying you so much money, I expect this work out of you, and you're doing the work, and I'm happy for it because I keep paying you for it because you are doing the work." So that's all well and good, you see? But if we ever doubt ourselves, if we ever doubt ourselves with reason or without reason, then what happens to us is we are destroyed for life. We are torn away from our innocence in such a way that we are unable to accomplish the goals that we have in life. And if we are torn away from accomplishing the goals we have in life, life becomes futile and useless to us, and we see no need for continuing, and so we die. We wonder why little children die, and why people die at various times. It's because life in their mind is fulfilled. They have fulfilled whatever purpose they are here to perform. And it's not good, it's not bad, it's just a fact. Now, can we live forever in our present body, in our present world, in our present condition? Yes, if we live in the innocence that we are always doing what is right and good. Are you always doing what's right and good? Are you always doing what makes you happy? Are you always doing what makes you feel good, that makes you feel wonderful? Are you always doing those things that keep you from any judgment with another person? Nobody can ever look at you and say, "You're right or you're wrong." They look at you and they say, "You're tzedakah." That's what tzedakah would do. Not that it's right, not that it's wrong, but that's what tzedakah would do. That's what Steph would do. That's what Ellen would do. That's what Greg would do. They do not concern themselves with anything else under the sun except that is who they are. Greg is neither good nor bad. He's neither high nor low. He's neither desirable or undesirable. Greg is Greg. Siddhika is Siddhika. Siddhika is no better than anybody else, no worse than anybody else, no higher, no lower, no whatever. Siddhika is just Siddhika. Stefan was telling me he and Anita had a good repartee and they enjoyed bantering with each other. Now, does that put him below Anita when he lets her banter with him or when he banters with her? And banter means to have sort of a banal discussion between yourself. Hey, how you doing, pussycat? Well, I don't know. When I'm around you, I sometimes feel like a little kitty cat, and sometimes I feel like an old tomcat, you know? It all depends. What do you expect out of me? Well, I just expect you to be the rose that you are. Well, okay, then that's what I am, you know. But other people listening in, they think, whoops, what's going to happen here? What sort of fire is going to take place here? What kind of misunderstanding or great understanding is going to take place here? And it's just banter. And the banter is not meant to be mean or belittling. It's just banter. So if one were to look and see this banter going on, one might say, she doesn't respect her boss. She doesn't respect her teacher or whatever. And what is the case? The case is that he is neither her teacher nor her boss. He is playing a role of doing what he's doing, and in that role, she is following the directions of the role that he is playing. But you see, to be a boss, there can only be one boss. And who would that be? Yourself. You are the only boss you will ever have. We may say that Ellen is a boss or Stefan is a boss or something like that, but that's not really true. All Ellen and Stefan or anyone else might do with the position that they have is to give directions. They give orders, they give directions to conduct the operation of the organization. And they are as much students, they are as much sojourners on the spiritual path as anyone else, yet they have passed the test in doing their job well. They give orders without vindictiveness, without being angry or mean. They give directions without being indecisive. They don't say, would you like to do it, or will you please do this? What did I say about please, Ellen, to you?
To not use it.
Why can you not use the word please?
It's not anymore an order.
No, it's not anymore a directive. What it is a suggestion which you may do or you may not do. Would you please do this? And you see, to a novitiate or to a monk, you never say please, you say do this. And then you might say please. But do this is the directive. Do this is the order. And there's no decision. You cannot say it's an alternative that you may follow. But it's an action. And so this is something that's so very definite, so very necessary to be said in a perfectly positive way, because if it isn't, then it becomes a suggestion allowing you to make the decision as to whether you want to do it or not. You follow that? So you want to be very careful in what your role is. Now, Stefan's role is not the boss. You are your own boss. Stefan's role is giving out the orders. And let's look at it this way. Here is a general in the army. The general says, I want everybody to be on the front at 0800 tomorrow morning. So then the various commanding officers under the general go to their squadrons, platoons, and regiments and groups of people, and they say, I want you to be on the firing line at 0800 tomorrow morning. No, would you please do that? I'd just love it if you all would do that, you know. And that's not the way, is it? So then it comes down to the next levels, and finally comes down to the sergeants, and the sergeants say, okay, at 6 a.m., fall out. The sergeant doesn't tell the men that at 0800 they must be on the front line. That's not his privilege. His privilege is just to say, 6 a.m., fall out. And maybe they didn't get to bed till 5 a.m. 6 a.m., fall out. I want you standing call at 7 and be ready. So at 7, they're all standing there ready. Okay, march. He doesn't tell you where they're marching. He just says, march. Would you please march? Come on, you guys. I'm the sergeant here. Come on, I'll march. He doesn't say things like that. That would be a very ineffective sergeant, wouldn't he? Hip, hip, your left, right, left. And he marches them right off into the front lines. And then when they're out there in the front, squad, halt! And they all stop. He doesn't say, would you please halt? You nice guys, you're wonderful boys. I know your mommy's so proud of you. Now, halt and shut up. Don't talk. He wouldn't even think of saying, anybody talks? They'd get some demerits and other things that the sergeants do. And then, okay, men, we're at the firing line now. It's now 7:45. In 15 minutes, the war is going to begin. 0800. So get your rifles primed, get all your bayonets on, and get ready. We're going to have a whip out and knock down thing. No choice of decisions. Now, what are the guys going to do? Oh, dear me, I'm going to die. Oh, oh, oh. No, no. They say, everything we've learned, now we're going to apply it. If they think they're going to die, what are they going to do? They're going to kill themselves. They're going to walk right into trouble. If they think they're going to live for their country and for their sergeant and for their lieutenant and for their whomever is up the line of command, they move. They move powerfully, dynamically. And there's no mamby-pamby about it. They are soldiers, and they are a success at being a soldier. Now, we are not teaching you to be soldiers, but we're teaching you to be a success at being a spiritual wage owner, spiritual sojourner along the way. And the only way for you to do that is to be in charge of yourself. You're your own boss. Because if you're on the front line and they say shoot and you don't shoot, you know what your buddies are going to do? You say, you're not shooting. You're letting us down. If we don't have all the shots go out, we're going to be killed. We're going to be we may be killed anyhow, but at least we're going to try to do a good battle here. Because this is the game of soldiering that we chose to play. Remember that. This is the game of soldiering we chose to play. We chose to be soldiers. Every one of you. You chose it. You could have taken not wanting to fight, where you are a conscious objector or something like that, a conscientious objector. You could have fallen and broken your leg. You could have come down with the flu or been in the hospital where you couldn't even do anything. You could have done a lot of stuff. You could have not been born. But you chose this experience because you wanted to be a soldier. You wanted to take orders. You wanted to be in the war. You wanted to do these things. I wanted to be in the war. I wanted to be in the Second World War because all my friends were there. It was the thing to do. I didn't want to shoot guns, and I didn't want to hurt people, and I didn't want to kill people or stuff like that. So I created myself in areas where I didn't do that. We still had to go to gunnery practice, and we still had to learn all those things. I learned it, and I became a sharpshooter, although I was a sharpshooter long before that. But I never had to shoot the guns in war. I never had to shoot them in battle. Kamikazes coming over our deck, I never had to shoot. Other guys were shooting. You see, we create our world. Why was I so special as to create myself not shooting any other people and having other people shoot other people? That's our choice. That's our choice. Did I follow orders as I was in the Navy? Sure did. Did I do everything I was told to do? Sure did. Did I gold brick whenever possible? Sure did. You know what gold bricking means? Gold bricking means the minute you can lay your head down and take a nap, you do it. The minute you can get out of a job or give a job to somebody else to do, you do it. You know, you just take an easy time. Don't let it bend you. Don't let it make you unhappy. So now on these journey through life that we're making as spiritual wayshowers, as spiritual sojourners on the way of life. You're not wayshowers yet. You are wayshowers to yourself. But as spiritual sojourners, travelers, you have one responsibility. And that's the responsibility to follow whatever path you have set for yourself. And the path you've set for yourself is to listen to your inward voice. Now, if your inward voice tells you that Herb just took an axe and cut off his hand, oh, how terrible, how terrible. Why did you create that happening? Why did you create that happening in your presence? Why did you create that happening in your world? Well, because that's what you thought. Can you create a world for yourself where there's nothing ugly, there's no chopping off of hands, there's no killing of people, there's no killing of bugs, there's no killing of ants or flies or beetles, no killing of dogs or cats, cows or sheep, horses or pigs? There's no killing of anything. Can you create that? Moses tried to do that. He said, "Thou shalt not kill under any circumstances." And then he went on to describe the number of circumstances in which you could kill. And boy, did he have the circumstances under which you could kill. Read Exodus 20. You will find for yourself in the Ten Commandments there some pretty rugged stuff. Man, it's rugged. How anyone could clean up the Ten Commandments and come up with something beneficial after that is tough. That's why I say, if we could get the first Ten Commandments, which had appeared in the gist a while ago, if we could live by the first Ten Commandments, life would be beautiful for us. But living by the second Ten Commandments that Moses brought the people was pretty tough. Pretty tough. Because it was tough for what reason? Can any of you think what the reason might be? It was dualistic. Thou shalt not kill! And then he named 100 ways to kill. If you hurt another person, you can be killed for that. If you covet another man's wife, you can be killed for that. If you cause a person to lose their eye, you should have your own eye put out. If you do, you know, all sorts of neat stuff like that. You're really, really great stuff. But when you read that, you think to yourself, when did a God of love come into the picture? When did a loving consciousness come into the picture? Siddhika and I were reading a group of statements on love. And in virtually all of the statements, coming from various sources, the Bible and anonymous writers and other writers that weren't anonymous, in almost all the statements, it said that speak from your own inner heart. Let God speak from your own inner heart. Follow your own inner self. Love from your own inner awareness. And it went on in many other ways. But you see, what is that saying? That's saying that we know within ourselves what's right and wrong. We know from within ourselves what is good. The little children I started my talk with this evening were little people. And did they know what was right and wrong? Now, you watched a movie, The Land Before Time Was, remember? And in that movie, the adults were all dispatched, and only the children remained. The adults cared for the children and ushered them away from harm and kept them alive. And finally, the adults succumbed to the changing of the tectonic plates, to the falling away of the volcanoes and the earthquakes and other things, and the youngsters survived somehow. And they kept trucking along and moving to a greener pasture that they hoped they would surely find. And what happened? They had many adventures, many opportunities for them to stop. But one of the long neck was given a vision by his mother and his father and his grandmother and grandfather, a vision of a land where it would be good eating and good sharing. And that vision carried him on and allowed the others to follow him, because he was the only one who had a direction. He wasn't sure of his direction, he wasn't sure of himself, but he followed that direction. He was just a youngster, but he followed that direction. He believed his mother and father and grandfather and grandmother were telling him true, and he followed what they said. They were loving beings to him. They were thoughtful, caring beings to him. And they opened the doorway to him to follow what his heart said. And true, he thought of not going on, just lying down and dying many times. But he carried on. And when his friends lost faith and lost belief in going on, he said, I don't care what you guys do, I'm going to go on, because I know there's a place. And that conviction gave them the strength to follow. But you see, if we don't have that inner determination to go the direction we want to go, we'll never get there. If we believe that we did something that caused the different problems that happened in our life, I guarantee you, you're absolutely wrong. Your mother or father didn't leave you because you were bad. Your mentor didn't leave you because you're bad. Nobody leaves your world because you're bad. The only people who leave your world temporarily or permanently are people who you no longer create in your world. And when you say, well, mother was 95 or 118 and she lived a good life and she left, you released her. You don't have to release your mother and father. You don't ever have to release them. You can keep them in your life eternally. And you can keep them alive in your life eternally. I was going through some of Ellen's pictures and I saw her mother sitting there with her at Diego's wedding and so forth. And I thought, gee, she looks just the same as she does now. Dynamic, forceful, wonderful, powerful lady, full of spit and vinegar, having a mind of her own and doing whatever pleased her. She didn't care what anybody else said. She did her own thing, and she's still doing her own thing. Now, what is it that you're going to do? You have chosen to walk your path. You have chosen your path to be a path of happiness and joy. You've chosen your path to be one that is fulfilling to you. And yet, your path's not fulfilling to you. You know why your path's not fulfilling to you? Your path is not fulfilling to you because you are not being yourself and having fun. You are playing somebody else's game. Oh, if you're a novitiate in the monastery and they give you requirements to do, you do them. But you don't do them because you're bottom man on the totem pole, or you're the only one on the bottom of the totem pole, or whatever. No. You do them because you are walking your spiritual path and you are learning self-discipline. You are learning to do all. You're never asked to do anything bad. You're never asked to do anything evil or harmful to you. You're never asked to do anything belittling to yourself. You're only asked to do those things that strengthen you in being yourself, whoever you are. And if you think that being the president is an easy role, try it sometime. Being the president, you have to play the role of someone who gives orders, and yet you have to play the role of humility. Remember when Patrick was here giving the orders, he had to get himself so fired up to, now you do this and you do this, because he didn't like giving orders. he didn't feel that he should give orders and that everyone should just do whatever they're doing and have everything get done just by accident. Like putting a monkey at a typewriter and saying, okay, monkey, type out your story. And if the monkey types all day long and ends up with four or five hits of letters that are actually a word, it would be a pure accident. And we are not monkeys. We are not people who do not know where we're going. We know very much where we're going. But in the process of knowing where we're going, we have to just do our job. Because that's the job we chose to work with us so that we can be walking our spiritual path most effectively. You follow that? It's very simple, very definite, but very, very important. We don't let us be the best president the company's ever seen. Let's be the best chairman of the board the company's ever seen. Let's be the best Greg the world has ever seen. Let's be the best Sitica the world has ever seen. You see, just be yourself, whoever that may be. I don't care. I don't care if we don't have a university, if we don't have a God Unlimited church. I don't care if we don't have any of this. What I do care is I'm me, and I'm always expressing myself. You see, Marlis thinks that I'm going to come over to Switzerland and visit with her and talk with her and hug her and give her all sorts of... I'm not. I live what I believe. Marlis made one fatal action in her life. What did she do?
Be the sister of Oscar.
She chose not to receive the gist. The gist is my voice. The gist is my life. The gist is my love. The gist is an expression of everything that's good and beautiful that I stand for. The gist, we're running our chapters of The Relative in the gist. The gist has run several other books already. The gist is the expression of who I am. And if anyone were to say to me, Herb, well, they have, Herb, I want you to come visit me, but I don't want you to bring your dog along. I wouldn't visit them. Not because my dog is so important to me, but you do not exclude any part of my life. When I was at Andromeda, and young couples came up to me in various stages of imagination and said, we want to get married. I said, fine. We want to be married in the outdoor chapel. Fine. We want to be married riding on our horses. Fine. And they came riding up on their horses, and they were married. Now, the horses didn't make or break that marriage. They didn't make that marriage more sacred or less sacred. But the thing is, this was part of the people. This was part of who they were. It represented who they were. This is what it means. Be yourself and have fun under all circumstances. Can you do that? It takes a lot of self-confidence to do that. Because there are people who are going to come up and say, hey, I don't like what you're doing. And you just say to them, well, that's me. I like you. I like everything. But I will not change my ways for you. I will be discreet, I will be respectful, but I will not change my ways. The minute you leave, I will be myself again. While you're here, I'll respect that. But I will not invite you again. And you come in my world, and you want to be in my world, then you accept my way of living. I went to speak at many churches and at many organizations throughout the world. And I wore my sandals, and I wore my normal jeans, white jeans, and I wore a white shirt, and that was it. And I went to speak, oh, you can't come in here like that, you have to have a suit, you have to have a tie, you have to have this. Felix was so insistent on that when I spoke to these large auditoriums, and I said, Felix, And Doris would take me out, and she'd buy me a brand new suit, and buy me a tie, and buy me a shirt, and I'd wear it perhaps that one night, but that's not me. Not that clothes make the man or don't make the man, but I should always be me. Now, if Swami Rama were to come up there wearing his robe or whatever, would they tell him, you go get a suit and you go get a tie and you go get some shoes on your feet. You can't wear sandals in here. Can you imagine them saying that to them? Or here on the Sistine Chapel, God is up there naked, holding his finger out to Adam, and Adam is laying back like saying, well, God, maybe I'll touch your finger and maybe I won't, you know. And naked as a jaybird, you know. Now, do we say, hey, put some clothes on those people. My goodness sakes, what is this? God naked? Well, when they had the crucifixion, I guarantee you with all that I know, Jesus nor the criminals had any cloth wrapped around them. They were put up there for public humiliation. And part of public humiliation was divesting them of all their clothing. Now, can you imagine that little piece of cloth that they drape around them being hung up there somehow? I didn't see a nail put through it or anything else like that. But you see, even the artist who portrayed the picture tried to cover up the Christ, cover up God. And it's like saying God's body or Christ's body or whomever is evil. And that's what Adam and Eve said when they had violated the first rule in the Garden of Eden, you know. We were naked and we were ashamed. Oh my goodness, you've been naked all your lives. You know, now why all of a sudden are you ashamed of being naked? Because they knew good and evil. They had eaten of the tree of good and evil. And you see, this is what happens to us. This is what happens to us. The moment we lose our innocence and we eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, we begin to judge. And the minute we begin to judge, then we begin to feel really upset about things. And we feel upset about things because we are not ourselves and having fun. You see, there are times when I'm with you and I'm working with you, and you sometimes forget what my role is. And my role is not to do your will, which you sometimes think it is. My role is not to perform for you like a chimpanzee or like a cheetah in Tarzan. My role is not to be here for you or do things for you. My role is merely to share with you who I am and be a catalyst to you and empowering you to walk your path in its most pure and beautiful way. And sometimes when you forget that, I have to leave you alone so that you can get your balance back, so you can get your act in order. But in my life, people don't pout. In my life, people don't feel sorry for themselves. In my life, people don't feel that other people are being mean to them or other people are not letting them do things the way they want to do things. In my world, everyone is a self-creator, creating exactly the world that pleases them and makes them happy. And if pouting pleases you and makes you happy, do so. If being unhappy because you can't have your own way pleases you, then do so. But don't pretend that it shouldn't be that way. Because it's always exactly the way we create it. So if you ever feel you had it up to here and you want to run away, then run away. Quit. Let go. But if you realize when you have it up to here, that means you're almost done. You're almost ready. And when you stop doing it, then it goes on down. And sure, the pain is gone. But as I mentioned, when a dog is in pain, he knows he's in pain, and then he shuts it off. and he lets the healing take place. He doesn't get himself in the way of healing. Like I told you about my brother-in-law, Bill, when he went to the hospital for his bypass, his quadruple bypass, I think it was, he wanted to tough it out because he was a tough old bird. I think he was 75 at the time. I'm a tough old bird. And the doctor says, Bill, if you will take the pain pills, your body will be relaxed and can heal much more rapidly. It doesn't have to fight the pain. Pain is part of the healing technique that the body uses. So if you are oblivious to the pain, your body can heal more quickly. Well, Bill took the pills, and his body healed quickly. And in no time at all, he was back living his normal, active, beautiful life. But you see, we sometimes think we know better than our physical body. We know better than our mental realization that's within us. We know better than our normal innocence. And if I can return you to that normal innocence, if I can return you to that feeling of who and what you are, then great things will happen. And I want to return you to that before time was. I want to return you to the realization of who you are, who you really are. You all are absolutely fabulous. You all are the greatest of the greatest on the face of the earth. There are not four more people than you who are more magnificent on the face of the earth. There are not. Because I see right through you, right past the facade that you might have put on for a temporary vision, and I see to the heart and depth of you. I love you unconditionally. And because I love you unconditionally, I cannot love you under conditions. I cannot love you because you're my friend. I cannot love you because you're my lover. I cannot love you because you're my teacher. I cannot love you because you're a genius. I cannot love you because you're God. I cannot love you for any reason. I can only love you unconditionally. The moment I love you because, for any reason, then I do not love you unconditionally. The moment I love you as a friend, I love you conditionally. I let you be your stinking, thinking stuff, if that's your situation. But if I love you unconditionally, you don't have a stinking, thinking self. You know what that means? To have bad thinking. You don't have that kind of a condition. If I love you unconditionally, and you see, I do. I love you all absolutely unconditionally. I love you before time was, before you lost your innocence. And for me, you never lost your innocence. To me, you're still just a little babe in arms, walking along with your brother or sister or friends, looking around at the world and just being in awe of all the joy that sparkles out everywhere around you. You delight in the stars that shine. You delight in the lights of the Christmas tree. Why are the lights on? And you delight in asking questions. Not because you want the answers, but because you like to hear yourself talk. You just delight in being you. And this is beautiful. This is beautiful. Ilse is a perfect example of this. Ilse delights in hearing herself talk. Ilse will ask me questions that she knows the answer for. She can tell you what page they are on and which book they're on and which paragraph in the book and perhaps even which sentence in the paragraph, because she knows these things so beautifully. Yet she delights in asking a question so that I will answer the question and say what she once said, because she knows that I can only answer the way the book gave it. You see, you're wonderful. You're, in my eyes, the way you are before time began. You are timeless. You are eternal. You are beautiful. And You are so filled with a power. You're like the innocent child creating his world, creating everything in his world, creating it good and very good. What do you think God was in the Old Testament when God created in chapter 1 of Genesis, when God created everything? What do you think God was? Do you think God was a gleeful child saying, let's create this, and let's create this, and oh, let's think. Now, wouldn't this be nice to have in this planet Earth? Now, over here in this solar system, we got these other things here. Now let's. What am I going to do? Oh, yes, I think. And who's God talking to? His universal self. Being himself and having fun. It's wonderful, isn't it? And how many people still clap their hands together and raise their eyes to God? That's fine. That's fine. That's better than not doing it at all. But then, keep raising your eyes. Keep raising your eyes to God. Keep raising your eyes to God. Keep raising your eyes to God. And what happens after a while? You look inside. Your head just naturally drops down to look inside. Your hands just naturally drop down to look inside. And when you look inside, what do you find? You find peace. You find goodness. You find the land before time was, which is where your rightful home is. Your rightful home was aware of your divinity and living your divinity. Being it and just having the time of your life. And once you do that, what's going to happen to you? You're going to be so content that whatever the role is, you'll play it beautifully. If your role is to play in Shakespeare, if your role is to play Eva from South America, if your role is to play whatever it's to play, the Emperor of Japan, if your role is to play anything, play it with all your heart. But give it your unique quality that makes how you play that role unforgettable. Because the way you play your role is great. But just remember what that role is. That role is, it's hard to say. That role is being yourself, and being yourself, who is yourself? God. Being yourself, your divine self, your absolute self. Being yourself, and having fun at it. You see? This is what it's all about, isn't it? This is what it's all about. Before time was, you are innocent, and you are always innocent. I love you.